You're listening to CHSR 97.9 FM. Welcome to This Week in Fredericton, the show that takes a deep dive into the latest news from your community. I'm your host, Zach Roman, and in this week's episode, we talk to the team behind a company creating a unique soil product with seaweed, and an associate professor at UNB that led a team in creating a course for healthcare professionals about addressing barriers to reproductive healthcare in correctional settings. A new Fredericton-based company, driven by research from a University of New Brunswick PhD student, is converting seaweed into biochar that improves soil health and crop resilience. SeaGreen Solutions is run by PhD student and seaweed researcher Marie Dankworth and videographer Joel Thompson. The entrepreneurial pair have also brought on UNB Forestry and Environmental Management student Catherine Olton to help out with a pilot project that SeaGreen Solutions is involved with this summer. SeaGreen Solutions has partnered with the City of Fredericton to use its biochar in city planters along Queen Street in an effort to improve soil moisture retention and plant health. The results of planters with SeaGreen's biochar will be compared against those without, and early observations seem promising. Dankworth says there's many benefits to her company's seaweed biochar.
Biochar has three key benefits. It locks in the carbon for 100 to thousands of years, and as well it has moisture holding capacity. So if you use it in soil, you can water less and your plants are thriving. And as well, our seaweed-based biochar has also ocean nutrients because the seaweed is growing in the ocean. And when we turn it into biochar, it keeps the nutrients. So really beneficial for flowers and all gardeners, what they're growing. It's really helpful.
Dankworth's journey to becoming an entrepreneur has been years in the making.
I'm originally from Germany, and I came here for my PhD in seaweed to Canada in 2017. And I started the entrepreneur journey like 2 years ago, I would say. I took a course, an online course with Dalhousie. It's called Lab to Discover. And they were kind of like encouraging using your scientific knowledge to solve real world problem. And so, yeah, I thought more about how can we use seaweed and, maybe be a part of a climate solution. How can we use seaweed on a daily basis? How can we spread the word for the seaweed? Because it has lots of great opportunities to use. And, it's an underutilized resource in Atlantic Canada. I'm still in the research world. My PhD is close to being done, so hopefully this year. It's been very interesting in regards of like how to tell your story about your startup, and it's very different from the scientific world because often you work on your thesis or your data set, and it's quite isolating. In the startup world, you have a lot of excited people who want to learn more about your ideas. They want to learn about your story. So it's a very, it's a different world, but very exciting. So I really appreciate dipping into that and being a part of it. It really helped me to be a little bit more confident with my career in that sense, because a PhD student in STEM, it's quite, I think, we don't really celebrate ourselves too much there. And I think we should, because we do a lot of work, which is really important. And the scientific papers we write, not many read them because they're really like technical. So I think we need to speak more about what we do and lift each other up and be supportive.
Thompson told CHSR how SeaGreen turns seaweed into biochar.
So it's essentially, you're heating the seaweed in a low oxygen environment. And we're also working with RPC research facility just close here to UNB at determining, the optimal temperatures, the optimal, because seaweed also has to be rinsed at a certain point in the process because of the sodium content. So the process in making it into biochar involves several things. Drying of the seaweed, of course. Seaweed, when you first remove it from the shores, is sometimes around 80% moisture, 80-90, depending on how long it's been sitting there. High moisture content, so we're looking at processes on you know, before transporting it, how we can, you know, partially dry it. But then, yeah, to make the biochar, you're just essentially, recently to make the biochar, we're heating with propane burners. This is not long-term how we'll do it, but, you know, essentially you do have to, you have to heat it up and keep the oxygen low because you're trying to make like a very refined charcoal. Like Marie said, it's like charcoal, but a very low ash content, and you don't want it to combust. So you don't want flames. You just want really, really high temperature. And everything burns off. It creates a lot of, there's syngases, there's bio oils. So we're exploring also, you know, the value chain there. What can be done with those things, including cycling them back into the heating process. So in which case we would be, you know, utilizing a lot less energy to create the biochar, because we really want our process to be as sustainable as possible. We're hoping to get, you know, net negative when it comes to the CO2 emissions and greenhouse emissions. Because I think one of the value kind of pieces there for the biochar is not only is it improving soil, but it also stores that CO2 that the seaweed has sequestered while growing for hundreds or thousands of years, like Marie said. So there's a climate element to it, too, that we're trying to refine. The charcoal or the carbon that you put in the soil is almost like little apartment complexes for nutrients and minerals and microbes. And so it's very porous, the biochar. So because it's porous, it has a ton of surface area. And so these nutrients, minerals, all these things can basically be stored in those pores. And then it kind of, you know, because it's stored over time, it doesn't leach when it rains as much. So you're not losing as much of nutrients. So if it's used in tandem with fertilizer, it allows you to use less fertilizer. The thing with our biochar, because it's seaweed based, it does contain more nutrients and minerals. But because of that, we're not just a, you know, a carbon product being put in the soil that stores nutrients and minerals. We're actually, you know, there are sea or ocean-based nutrients and minerals that are contained in the seaweed biochar, which is an amazing thing, and it will actually benefit the soil. But it also, like I said, puts us in a gray area with being certified. So we're just going through, like, the process of that, which every company needs to go through, their certifications and things. You know, we've had a lot of amazing help, people reaching out, and because it's our first time going through trying to certify a soil product. We're getting a lot of advice, a lot of, you know, advisors kind of helping us through that process, which can be a little confusing and intimidating. But yeah, we're like I said, it's kind of the thing that makes us unique and gives us value, but also it slowed us down a little.
Olson has played a major role in helping Sea Green Solutions this summer.
Yeah, so I did a lot of the production of the product, as well as now I'm doing the daily monitoring of the flower pots downtown on Queen Street. And we have 11 pots that contain biochar, and we have 5 control pots that we compare against. And we have a Dr. Soil multimeter and a moisture meter that I take with me every day to the flower pots and take measurements and write them all down and then put them in Excel. And we use all the data in Excel to kind of make some graphs and analyze the data and make it into something that we can, you know, valuable information that can be used to tell a story and tell us what the biochar is doing in the soil and what the control pots are doing and how our pots are growing differently than the control pots. The biochar was only put in the pots, I think it was around June 10th. And so since then, I've been monitoring every day. And so far, I've noticed quite a few differences, quite a few things, like the minerals, for example, like nitrogen, for example, is a lot higher in our pots than in the control pots. And the biochar seems to be keeping that quite consistent. And the moisture in the biochar pots is also staying much more consistent than our control pots, where we've noticed, like, since it hasn't been raining, we've noticed a lot of, like, the moisture stays a lot longer in the pots in our biochar compared to the control pots.
For this pilot project, we partnered with someone from PEI. They are called Organic Atlantics.
Atlantic Organics? Yeah, something. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Joe.
You almost had it.
So we ordered from there because they have beach cast, and they collect it with horses, with rigs. So the CO2 footprint is very low. And we partnered with them because we had like a time crunch basically to deliver the product to the city because it's very seasonal. But long term, we want to go to the beaches and collect ourselves the beach cast. There is some regulations with, you know, provincial or the government, which we have to figure out. But that's our goal, to collect the seaweed from the beaches ourselves and then use it.
This pilot project is not only valuable, you know, to the city as kind of an experimental, could this work to help us irrigate less, you know, spend less on labor for watering and things like that. But for us, we get to see, you know, when it's used in this setting, and it can be extrapolated into like other settings as well, home gardeners, whatever, what is the value that we're getting out of that during the run of that season.
Thompson and Dankworth said the Fredericton startup community has been very helpful during their entrepreneurial journey.
And you get these people, you have these meetings where they're just like, they believe in what you're doing and they're excited about it. And they're talking about, we can connect you to this person or that person. And it's just, it really is like such a supportive community, the startup world. So I could name, you know, we could spend an hour naming the people who have helped us along and who have, you know, given their time. They're not getting paid to give you their time, you know. They're not like, they sit down, they have coffee with you, they give you advice, they connect you to people they know.
It can be stressful, but I think mostly it's very rewarding to try the entrepreneur world, or like, you know, just go down that path. It's very, you learn a lot about yourself.
The story of Sea Green Solutions is proof you never know where life might take you.
I went to the ocean with like students when I was like 18. So I didn't really know what I want to do with my life back then, after high school. And in Europe, people do a little bit more like soul searching after high school. We don't really go right to university because you don't know what you want to do in most cases. So I went to France and traveled a little bit. And I saw seaweed the first time in the ocean, and I was fascinated how beautiful it is. And it was like an underwater garden, and I was like, that's so cool. And I didn't know about it, so I wanna study it. And yeah, I kind of like was fascinated and surprised. We don't know much about seaweed in that sense. So yeah, that fascinated me and I want to study it.
If you're interested in following Sea Green Solutions' journey, there's many places you can do so.
We are on social media, on Instagram, LinkedIn, very active as well, Facebook. And Joel has a YouTube channel set up for us, which is...
Well, I would say that a lot of those are Sea Green Solutions NB. So a lot of times if you just look up Sea Green Solutions, you might not find us. But if you add NB, so New Brunswick, but just the abbreviation, NB, you should find us. But then, yeah, YouTube, I'm trying to think. I think if you just look that up too, you'll find us. But really, we're going to have that all contained. Our website's still being worked on. But seagreensolutions.ca is our website right now. Like I said, we're kind of, you know, in the process of you know, refining that website. But right now, if you go there, there is information. You can link to our YouTube channel there. And I think there's a contact form. So if you're interested in reaching out, we've had some people just say, hey, you know, I'd like to try it in my garden. And so we're kind of keeping people posted on when they're able to do that. If anyone, you know, listening has a garden center or somewhere where they'd like to trial it, or they have an organic farm, we're definitely interested in doing that.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to This Week in Fredericton, the show that takes a deep dive into the latest news from your community. I'm your host, Zach Roman, and thanks for listening to CHSR 97.9 FM. An associate professor in the University of New Brunswick's Faculty of Nursing and Health Sciences has led a team in creating and launching a new free, bilingual e-learning course to help healthcare professionals address barriers to reproductive health care in correctional settings. Dr. Martha Painter and her team at UNB collaborated with University of British Columbia Continuing Professional Development and the nonprofit Wellness Within to create the course, which is called Dignity and Access: Family Planning Care for People Experiencing Incarceration. The course is part of the federally funded CART Access Project, which is a national initiative focused on improving access to sexual and reproductive health care for underserved populations across Canada. Dr. Painter sat down with CHSR to discuss the new course.
We're calling it a Dignity and Access Project Basically, this is a course that is accredited through the University of British Columbia's Faculty of Medicine Continuing Education Department. And the course teaches health professionals, so physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners, midwives, pharmacists, social workers, about the realities of family planning for people experiencing incarceration. In addition to my role at UNB, I am the Director of Nursing Research for the Contraception and Abortion Research Team, which is headquartered out of UBC Faculty of Medicine. So this is a longstanding collaboration between my lab and UBC. My research portfolio includes two large arms, and one is about expanding access to abortion and contraception and other types of reproductive health care. And then the other arm is about sexual and reproductive health outcomes within the prison system and of people experiencing criminalization. So this course is where those two things overlap. I've been working in this area for a very long time, and some of our recent research that was funded by Health Canada's Sexual and Reproductive Health Fund looked at the experiences people are having when they're incarcerated trying to access family planning care. And as a result of those findings, it became evident that health professionals need more education and training to feel confident in providing this care in a way that promotes dignity, privacy, confidentiality. So we wanted to create a course that would meet those needs.
Painter explained that people might not know what healthcare looks like for people experiencing incarceration.
Well, so much of the experiences of people experiencing incarceration are invisibilized, right? We really do not know what's going on behind closed door, those doors. So the intention of the course is to highlight the realities of health in these spaces. And what my research has shown is that this population of patients experience very high needs for sexual and reproductive health care and additional barriers. There can be barriers for us in the general public to access sexual and reproductive health care. Maybe we don't know where to go. Maybe we're listening to a lot of misinformation on social media. Maybe we're facing providers who have objections to providing comprehensive care. So those are barriers all of us could face. And then on top of that, you're seeing institutional barriers. People in prison, they have to pay to use the phone. They don't have the internet. They're not using Dr. Google. And they're really limited in the health information they can get. We also, across the country, are experiencing a lot of U.S. news and social media that may make us confused about our rights and our services here in Canada with respect to abortion in particular, but sexual and reproductive health care more generally. So for people who have higher needs, who are experiencing higher rates of unintended pregnancy, very high rates of sexually transmitted and bloodborne infections, unmet needs for contraception, higher rates of abortion, very high fertility, earlier sexual activity, much higher risk of exposure to sexual violence. So for this population, they need more care, and yet they're less likely to get the care. And so as healthcare providers and as a registered nurse, I count myself in this pool, we need to understand those needs and also figure out how to overcome those barriers to reach these patients. And what we learned in our research is that patients don't necessarily know what they're allowed to have when they're incarcerated. Of course, in Canada, you are absolutely allowed to have all of the same services in the health system when you are incarcerated as when you are not. And here in Canada, abortion is completely decriminalized. There are absolutely no limits on abortion in law. But you might not know that. So that education needs to reach people who are incarcerated, and also people who are providing this care need to understand what to do, for example, when someone arrives at their clinic in shackles. And you obviously cannot provide gynecological care when someone is shackled. So how do you do that negotiation? What are your rights as a healthcare provider? And how do you build that confidence and those strategies to be able to communicate effectively to ensure your patient has an equal experience to someone who is not incarcerated? So in Canada, we have two main types of incarceration. I think that's important. The federal system is for people who have been sentenced to 2 years or more. And the provincial system is for people who are remanded. So that's when you're held before your trial. So you haven't been tried or convicted or sentenced. But you also are not on bail. So that's remand. Or you could have a provincial sentence, which is any amount up to 2 years, less a day. So the average length of stay in a provincial jail is about a month and very short periods of time. Within the provincial institutions, healthcare is provided usually, but not always, not in every province, by the health authority. So here in New Brunswick, Horizon provides health services to the Miramichi based prison for women. And some care is provided in-house. There would be quite a number of nursing staff. However, the physician only attends the facility for a couple of hours a week. And as you can imagine, there are a lot of acute health needs. So sometimes what we find in our research is that sexual and reproductive health gets crowded out by acute mental health needs, substance use needs. So that's the reality of how care is accessed. A lot of the time people will be, it's necessary to leave the prison for an external appointment. And when that happens, you will be escorted, usually by two correctional officers. And they typically have a policy that not only do you have to be in restraints, but you also have to be within sight and sound so they can see you and hear you. This policy from the correction side directly conflicts with our responsibilities as healthcare providers. So we have a code of ethics and we have standards of practice that absolutely require us to treat our patients safely. So shackles are a significant barrier to safety. They can cause pressure ulcers, other types of injury. They're at great falls risk. Furthermore, sight and sound policies violate the privacy, confidentiality, and dignity of our patients. So when these things are in conflict, we have to recognize that our responsibility, our licenses, depend on us treating this patient respectfully and appropriately. So we do need to figure out a way how to ensure that we can give that care. Because on the correction side, they don't have that same license and that same responsibility.
Painter's Course was made in collaboration with many different partners.
I will say the UBC CPD department has a very robust process to creating a course, and we worked with an advisory team that we compiled from people across the country. So this table of voices included people with lived experience of incarceration, both at the provincial level and at the federal level, so who had been exposed to both types of environments and health services, as well as healthcare providers, so obstetrics and gynecology experts and family medicine expertise, people who had provided healthcare in a prison, Francophone voices, Anglophone voices, Indigenous voices, of course, because here in Canada, Indigenous people are very significantly overrepresented in prison systems. We see anti-Indigenous racism at work very clearly when you step inside a prison. So this group met very regularly and worked on all aspects of the course together. The course includes didactic content, quizzes, that kind of interactive content, as well as some videos that the lived experience experts provided small films to complement the course. So it took over a year to make it happen, and we're very pleased with the result. And it is also, of course, available in both French and English.
Painter's course can be done as part of a healthcare professional's continuing education requirements.
So as health professionals, we have to do continuing education every year to maintain our licenses. And oftentimes we have to pay for that continuing education. But this is free. So that is going to help with the distribution. We're sharing this as widely as we can think of. What we have found is that people are not getting even basic education about the experiences of incarcerated individuals in their health professional training. And this is strange because incarceration in Canada is surprisingly common. Another study that I worked on was looking just at the children of incarcerated parents. And we found that 1.2% of kids in Canada have an incarcerated parent. Incarceration affects a large portion of people. So as health professionals, we are without a doubt going to experience an incarcerated patient at some point in time. There will be places where this is more likely, for example, the emergency department, but all of us could experience this. And while the course is focused on family planning, because there's some unique issues that are related to sexual and reproductive health, of course, that has unique considerations in terms of history of sexual violence and abuse, in terms of the dignity and privacy considerations during care. The course will support people who could encounter incarcerated patients at any type of health service to understand kind of that negotiation as well as what people in prison are facing. One thing I always want to put out there is this question, you know, so much of my work is about trying to understand what health experiences people have, how could they possibly have a better, safer, more rights upholding experience. But the greater issue in Canada really is that we incarcerate too many people. We rely on incarceration in a way that does not make sense. It's extremely expensive from a taxpayer perspective. It does not help people. There is no evidence that this is helping. And I think we need to be really critical about why we are relying on this system that is so harmful and presents so many risks to health. Why are we doing that? Why are we not looking at every possible opportunity for an alternative way forward, an alternative way to restore justice?
Thanks for listening to This Week in Fredericton, the show that takes a deep dive into the latest news from your community. We're on the air every Friday from 11:30 a.m. to noon, right here on CHSR 97.9 FM. If you have a news tip, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us by email at news@chsrfm.ca. I'm Zach Roman, and that was This Week in Fredericton.